To the Joint Committee on Ways and Means and Natural Resources for Monday, February 28th, 2005. We'll actually conclude with the Department of Land Conservation and Development public hearing today. We have with us Director Shatterly, Bob Rindy, and of course Christina is back with us again. Welcome to you all, and why don't we go ahead and get started. I'm going to hand the gavel. I need to step outside for just a moment. We need to continue on, I think, with performance measures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Lane Shatterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We are on page 16 of tab C. This is the annual performance progress report. I think we ended with five, and so we would pick up today with our performance measure number six.
All right.
Just before we jump into that, for the record, I'll note that there were questions asked at the last hearing on Thursday regarding a few of our performance measures. We've turned those over to staff. It's my understanding those will come up later in the process, but I just wanted to reflect that the questions that the committee addressed to us on Thursday have been addressed in memoranda that we've filed in, today with staff. Okay. Then we begin with performance measure number six, and I think what I'll do is turn this back over to Bob Rindy and let him lead the walkthrough, and then I'll jump in and be welcome, we welcome questions as we go through.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the department. And it may be instructive to look at measures six, seven, and eight as a cluster of measures. They were measures that came up, I'm sorry, we're starting on page 16.
Tab C,
and then 7 is 18. And the reason I mentioned the three of these is we'll go over these one at a time, but they were all handed to us at the end of last session, at which time we were in discussion about shovel-ready industrial sites and about the need for there to be many more shovel-ready industrial sites statewide. But for whatever reason, number six is about shovel-ready commercial land. Seven is industrial land, and eight is for residential. And I would note for the record that we have requested to drop measures six and eight. We can't find any cities statewide that are trying to zone shovel-ready commercial land. Note that to make land shovel-ready, generally local governments or the state through grants have to expend funds in advance to try and bring services directly to property, and especially for industrial properties, to try and eliminate other kinds of impediments, such as could be wetlands, could be a variety of other things that make lands not shovel-ready. So, and second thing that we have now quite a bit of data about shovel-ready industrial sites, but we have no data from jurisdictions trying to zone shovel-ready commercial or residential sites. And so in addition to there not necessarily being anyone statewide who is doing that for commercial or residential, we don't have any data. So we've requested that we be able to eliminate number six on commercial sites. For number seven on industrial sites, we've requested that we amend that measure to refer to the statewide effort that's being coordinated by ERT, the governor's
economic revitalization team.
Thank you. To identify what they're calling now certified sites. I think certified is close to shovel ready, but it's a little bit different measure, and that's why they changed the name slightly. But we now have some new wording for measure seven that we also coordinated with the Economic Development Department, OECDD, and with ERT, so that we all have the same measure. We are all trying to identify certified sites statewide.
Very good. Representative Shoffer.
Thank you. Now, when you say industrial only, does that include a warehouse distribution center that is centered only around a commercial business?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffer, that's correct. I probably In fact, I think the word industrial is taken out of that site, and that is, it's reworded. What we're talking about is what OECD calls traded sector, which is broader than industrial. It includes warehousing. It includes other things that maybe traditionally were called commercial, such as call centers and a variety of other large employment things. And so the word industrial is probably too narrow. ERT and OECD and our department are trying to identify sites for a broader range of things, but not for retail. And that's what we think was implied by commercial.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Krieger, you have a question?
Yeah. What are the definitions of commercial and industrial as far as is it by administrative rule as you use it, or is there more than one place or in statute that specifically defines those? Because it would seem like there would be some things that would be kind of almost mixed, at some point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, there are actually, the part of the problem with this is there were no definitions provided for us when these came into being, but we generally use the term employment land. That's a term of art that came into being in the mid-70s to mean both industrial and commercial. Planners, land use planners, usually talk about commercial lands, and they mean retail and some other related things such as office. And the problem with these terms is that there are no standard definitions. If you probably looked around the state at zoning ordinances, you'd find many different definitions. And that's why we wanted to zero in on, in particular, on the certified sites, and the ERT has, as I said, a definition that revolves around trading sector, which is a term that's defined in statute, rather than commercial or industrial.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I think it's an important question, and one that if we focus on industrial with a historical construct of a smokestack kind of use, we're going to be defining it too narrowly, and we'll miss opportunities. And so I think we've matured in the process of this certification, in the certification process, the industrial lands certification, and through our own industrial lands task force and our economic development policy advisory committee to recognize that industrial has to be looked at as something broader than that traditional smokestack kind of approach. And frankly, if there are parts of the state where that simply is just not appropriate, and communities that aren't going to be looking at those traditional smokestack industries, but could nevertheless use those employment opportunities of a broader nature, and so that's part of what we're doing with the governor's economic revitalization team, and also with OECD on this combined performance measure that we would propose, and that would be to take a broader view of what that means, so that we're not just focusing on that one narrow subset of industrial to the exclusion of other employment opportunities.
The difference between, excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
You got industrial, you got manufacturing. Is manufacturing within industrial normally then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, typically it would be.
Yeah. Question for you. Representative Morgan and I, Chair Morgan and I, talked about this, and we thought that an interesting measure on one of these would be in relation to the ERT, your involvement. We thought, and we've actually required this of another agency that's involved in ERT issues, and it is to say we'd like to have you track the number of ERT projects that you have the lead role in, I think is how we want to characterize that have been completed on schedule. Is kind of what we're after there. So completed on schedule is the operative term, but only for those projects that you guys are recognized as the lead agency in. Or you're participating outside of that, that's different. But in this case, where you're the lead agency, we'd like to have you do that. Completed on schedule is the measure we've got.
And Mr. Chair, I presume you're referring to applications for permits on the ERT sites, certified sites.
If that is the project that you're the lead agency on, yeah. Now, if there's another ERT project that you're involved with, this is more than just industrial lands. This is any ERT project that you're involved with that you are the lead agency on. We want to know how you're doing in terms of on schedule. It's a little different than this industrial lands piece we're talking about, which is fine. And I think your direction on that is good, but it's the broad measure we're also after, too.
Yes, we would be glad to work on that. I'd like to see how to word it. We are probably the only agency in IRT that doesn't itself issue permits. So I presume we're talking about projects that with other agencies, a lot of times sure. Their lead is because they have permit authority. And
it may turn out that you are very rarely, yeah. if ever, the lead agency. And if that's so, that's fine. We want to see that measure because probably what we're going to end up doing here is put a matrix up on the board and look at each agency in the natural resource arena that is involved in ERT projects and look at, down the road, look at who's getting the bulk of those, which also helps us figure out where we need to send resources to deal with those things. But then also how we're doing at each level with completing those issues on schedule, because that's the real reason we have ERT teams out there, is to get things done a little more quickly here, move the process forward a little more quickly.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that sounds fine. I think we would welcome that. What it is, too, I think is a measure of our commitment to and participation with the economic revitalization team, and I've said up front from day one that is a high priority for the department. Obviously, it would be then a matter of how we word that performance measure, but assuming it's consistent with the other IRT agencies that we're all measuring the same thing, I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, it is basically the same verbiage we're asking other agencies and natural resources that are involved in IRT to do the same. Mr. Nelson.
Just an issue there, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, how many different IRT teams are there? There's seven. I would suspect, whatever the number is, I would suspect that some of them are going to be performing better than others. That would be my reaction to it, because I know the team in my part of the country, I mean, they're just like a well-oiled machine. They're just cranking out projects. And they really work well together. But I've heard from other districts that that's not truly the case.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, if I can comment on that. I'm not sure, and I'm not in a position to comment on it, mostly because I don't know, but I think from your perspective, that may be one of the functions of the performance measure, to encourage that kind of participation that we have out in your part of the state, if in fact we have parts of the state that aren't working together as well. So from that perspective, I think, again, I would welcome that as a goal.
Okay, very good. Let's move along.
Measure 8, as I mentioned earlier, was one of this cluster. It refers to shovel-ready residential land. Generally, communities don't take the effort to make expenditures to make residential land shovel-ready, although we note that Performance Measure 3 that we have talks about providing public facilities, especially sewer and water systems. And to the extent that sewer and water is in the vicinity of a site, usually it's the case that a residential developer will pay for the additional development that brings sites up to shovel-ready status. For that reason, we weren't able to locate any communities that were trying to do this, and so we have no data.
We kind of thought maybe that you just ought to delete this one entirely.
That was our feeling.
I don't think
it's
particularly useful anyway.
Moving to Measure 9, we are, in this measure, we're looking at urban areas that have a population of 25,000 or more, and these are the metropolitan areas of the state, and we're trying to encourage the adoption of transit-supportive land use regulations. Transit-supportive land use regulations are usually zoning that encourages and enhances, whether it's light rail lines or bus lines or other transit that these larger cities have, to the extent cities provide zoning that encourages mixed use, higher residential densities along those lines, then generally those systems function much better. And so that's been something we've encouraged as part of our program, and this measure would show that.
Representative Dingfelder.
When you're done, I have a question for you.
The only thing I was going to add is that there's data shown under 2004 for this, and you'll note that's not anywhere else. And that was preliminary, and I think that was an error. That should not have crept into this. This came out before the end of the year, so I'm not certain that number is right, the 72% there, and we did want to make that correction.
Okay, so 2004 is is not, that 72% is not correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, that was a preliminary number. These, of course, were submitted mid-year. That was a preliminary number that was on there, I think, for just internal and drafting purposes, but it doesn't belong in this report.
You have a sense of where it might be?
I think, I'm pretty sure that's about accurate.
We're
moving along. It's just that none of our other reports address 2004, and we didn't want to create an inconsistency here between this and the others. So you'll see that again probably in 2 years, hopefully better than that even, but for this report we would take that out of your consideration.
We seem to be ahead of the schedule, your targets on this particular measure anyway. We got things outstanding. So.
On the second page, by the way, page 23 of that measure, we noted that there is a federal measure. And what we should have noted to you, that measure probably only applies at this point to Portland, but that Portland has received a high rating from the feds in terms of the zoning that Portland has for its light rail line. And that wasn't noted here, but should have
been. Okay. I see that. All right, very good.
Please go forward. Thank you. And on that same page 23, you talk about the TGM grant, and I was curious, is that appropriate out of your budget or is that of ODOT? Because I do know ODOT, they manage that program. Is that correct? Or maybe you can explain for the committee just how that works, since it's a joint program, and whose budget it comes out of, and what's the status of the TGM program? Because that's my understanding, one of the major ways we promote this transit-oriented development is, especially for small communities that don't have maybe planners with transit
backgrounds. I'll take a stab at that, Mr. Chair. Representative Dingfelder, the Transportation and Growth Management Program is a joint program of ODOT and the Department of Land Conservation and Development, which is actually it's very appropriate because it does recognize the connection between transportation and land use planning. The funding of it to DLCD is reflected in our other funds because it comes from ODOT. So that's the route by which we get our funding direct through our budget. But ODOT, I think, actually disperses the grant funds. So it goes back. So they support the operational piece of the TGM program in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The grant funds are actually an aspect of the ODOT budget. I want to say that I'm right. All right. Okay. And but we have staff working on those grant applications as well. It's just the interconnection.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So does that money come from general fund for ODOT, or is it highway trust fund, or what's the I just don't know. I've been familiar with TGM grants, but
I was going to say. Let me start, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder. It starts out as federal, and then...
That's Christina Shear for the Department of Administrative Services.
The
TGM program is one of those examples where it's that actually the funds are actually expended twice in the state budget. First, as ODOT has an expenditure in their budget as a special payment to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, who in turn also disperses the funds. ODOT receives the funds as federal funds, converts them to other funds through their unique federal funding mechanisms, and then transfers the funds to DLCD, if that answers your question.
It does, but it begs one more question, which is, so we're dependent on the renewal. It's not iced tea anymore. Is it tea for the 21st century or whatever? Every changes every time. So is that where the source of funding comes from? And if so, are we seeing trending up, down? What's the future hold for these grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I'm not certain what the status of the TGM program is on that. I don't believe it will be adversely affected, but I can't say that for certain at this point, and would like to get back to you on that.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I think ODOT has been watching that very closely, and we can check with them and get back to you.
Thank you.
This rising trend here, urban areas 25,000 or greater, that I would soon include Happy Valley, Gresham, Damascus area. Now, we got really good planning out there, great planning, but the Damascus area, unless we get a good transportation system through there, which we don't have, we could have all the great planning in the world, which would still make this trend continue to go up, but in reality, the transportation would not exist. So this is kind of I mean, I read this. This is good. I'm glad people are planning, but it really doesn't reflect the kind of transportation we have on the ground at all. Am I correct in that assumption?
Chair Representative Schaffler, the next measure actually that we're going to talk about is this one. This one, I don't. Again, we've had some renumbering that we've proposed to you, but this is a narrow measure of zoning along major transit, usually light rail routes, and then the next measure, number 10, is where we track the more detailed transportation planning, transportation system plans that jurisdictions do that certainly cover the kind of the transportation that's occurring in your area.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, this is a fairly narrow performance measure in that what it does get at is land development regulations, as it says here, that assure land use and transit systems are integrated and mutually supportive. Clearly, in the metropolitan in metro, you're going to have that at a higher degree of development than you do in other parts of the state, as far along as they are with TriMet, in particular, the bus system, as well as light rail. And that doesn't mean that every community has, you know, the perfect mix of bus service and planning in that community. But looking at the metro area as a whole, they're doing very well at it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to number 11.
Okay.
Was that the next one?
Well, actually,
did I skip
mentioned 10, but
let's
talk about 10.
Yeah, I think you were going to move it closer to number 5. Is that right?
Yes. And number 10, as I said, is a broader measure than number 9, which is just generally about larger systems like light rail. 10 is looking at the transportation systems plan, and especially the cost estimates and funding plans for transportation systems, which is one of those elements that we've tended to focus on more as this measure does specifically track. You'll note we are exceeding our targets. That is going to be more and more difficult depending on what happens to periodic review, but for now we are there, and that is partly reflective of the fact that we do have federal funding and more grant availability to try and encourage this kind of plan.
Mr. Chair, before we leave this one, this was one that I think I mentioned at the beginning of our overview on the performance report on Thursday. This is one of those performance measures that, because it's tied to periodic review and technical assistance, the grant funding that we have available for periodic review and technical assistance will influence our ability to meet these goals.
Okay. Very good.
Number 11 is looking at farm use, and it's basically simply a measure that tracks how well the state maintains farm use zoning. Interestingly, in light of current events, Measure 37 will clearly affect farmland, but it won't necessarily be tracked in the way this measure is worded. And we've discussed it might be necessary for us to think about. We will certainly have the conversation internally as whether we ought to change this, because under Measure 37, farmland might be subdivided in perhaps a substantial amount, but it wouldn't necessarily change zoning just because of the way that measure works. And so this will start to give us some false data, and that might be corrected by coming up with a measure that tracks something else besides just the retention of the zoning.
That is an excellent point. In fact, we have several questions about this particular measure and potential suggestions that sort of get to that direction. One of the things is how will you capture Measure 37 data? So in other words, will you be able to have just ag land, farm, or will you break it out in farm, forest, urban, or urban interface, or even the percentage of those cases, Measure 37 cases, that go to court? You're obviously going to get the bulk of them, at least from what we heard from you on Thursday. So how will you track? And you may need to come up with separate performance measures for Measure 37 alone, because it is such a departure from how your agency has been able to conduct business up until this time, because it is a relevant issue that's different. So we should probably talk about the number of claims overall, which you know and track, but the time to process and resolve, we sort of talked about that the other day. And one of the things that has to do with farmland is maybe a measure on the volume of acres that are involved in Measure 30 claims. All of that is how it relates with the change in zoning or not. Because your point is well taken, is because a Measure 37 claim may be a Measure 37 claim, and we want to track how quickly you resolve them and those types of things. But at the same time, it may not, and that's why, in fact, I wanted to take the temperature of the committee here. Should you even try to measure that in acres? So the number of acres that are actually involved in Measure 37 claims. Or would that be a worthwhile measure?
Mr. Chair, if I may, it would be worth tracking, and we need to track it. I'm not sure that it's a measure for the department. I mean, that's just in the sense of how many acres come in statewide affected by Measure 37 claims really will be a function of claims being submitted to the state. It won't be anything that we do. I think measures related to our processing of claims, that's one thing. It's going to be hard to turn the number of acres into a performance measure. I can see where that's necessary, and in fact, we want it, and I can tell you what DAS is doing to create the statewide registry.
Okay.
That's going to be useful, and I think that's necessary information, but as a performance measure, there's not a lot that we can do to influence it one way or the other.
Okay, Representative Krieger.
Part of the same. So there's a AG's opinion coming out.
Should be out sometime even today.
Yeah, well, I guess it's out. I just haven't got my copy yet.
Okay.
Kind of depending what that says. That should show a lot of light to you and the commission, to this body, the two land use committees, if they can get together. All of that mix put together is going to have an effect on what you do.
Yeah.
So you... It almost seems like we're asking the agency to do things that we don't even know what the ground rules are. How many hours would you think that all this took to put all this together, all these performance measures?
Oh, Mr. Chair.
A lot.
Thank you.
So we've got thousands, we've probably statewide got millions of dollars tied up in performance measures that I won't debate you, there's not a person in the room could talk about the ones from last session. I can't. I remember reading them. I remember looking at them. And there were a couple that we asked them to develop for different, to find out specific things. And we're looking for outcomes. We're trying to find a way to measure the efficiency and whether you're serving your people. And I don't know where we're going with it. I'm hearing the same comments.
Yeah.
Remember Representative Crummell last session?
Yeah,
you were there. You were running the floor part of the time.
Not at this time.
That's right. Mr. Chair, as I recall, Representative Crummell punched into the queue just about on every budget bill to raise a performance measure.
Yeah, he asked me whether Kerry yield to a question. No. That was the end of that.
Has he followed up on any of that?
Well, partly that's the process that we're engaging in here, is his attention to that particular issue. But getting back to on number 11 specifically, in terms of the percent of farmland that retains that zoning, I would suggest that you change you're probably going to need to change your targets at least a small amount to reflect Measure 37, and you may consider maybe a separate line for Measure 37 in terms of percentages, because you may be right. It may not affect it a lot, but it would be interesting to see what kind of measure. But set that aside. When it comes to Measure 37, we are going to need some new performance measures to measure how you are processing the claims, timely manner, numbers, and I don't know. I don't think the volume of the acres issue is a good measure there. But it would probably be also helpful to us to get a breakdown, maybe not necessarily as a performance measure, but at least a breakdown from you on the types of those Measure 37 claims. How many affect agricultural land, forest land, urban interface, those types of things. That would be helpful, I think, for us.
Just, if I may, Mr. Chair, I'll fill you in on what's going on that score. The Department of Administrative Services has created a database that's online that identifies the claims received by the state and includes that kind of information. We have DASH will be able to tell you more about this because they're building the system, but they are in the process of developing a system that will be able to receive that same information from counties and cities so that we get a true statewide picture. The challenge, and we think that will work well, it will be voluntary on the part of cities and counties whether or not they want to input their information. Absent a statutory change requiring them to do that, we just don't have the authority. We think we'll get pretty good participation, and AOC, the Association of Oregon Counties, and League of Oregon Cities, as organizations, have been very helpful and at the table in developing this coordinated database. But it will be voluntary at the local level, so we won't be able to guarantee that it will be complete information, even when it's up and running, for locals to put their information into. We can certainly do it for the state claims, but as we know, there are local claims out there as well that we may not be measuring at the same time.
Okay.
Thank you. This 0.5% that are out of your control is local. Does that strictly mean a decision was made to develop it outside of farm use, or does that include land that may have been converted over to parkland or wetland or any of that stuff too? Strictly for development purposes, that 0.5%?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think you get that in the paragraph on page 26 that has compare actual performance to target and explain the variance. It talks about ag lands outside UGBs being converted to rural residential, commercial, or industrial uses. Those are the conversions that would constitute that 0.05%. And, Mr. Chair, while we're at it, performance measure 12 really has the same issues. It's just a mirror image of 11, but dealing with forest lands. And we'll continue to work with you on that measure 37. I think that there are some performance measures that would be appropriate to measure 37. How it plays into this is going to be problematic, again, since we don't have control of that data, that information. But we sure know that over time, as we get more measure 37 claims, this 99.94, 99.93 is going to become less and less meaningful because the zoning may remain the same, but the uses on the ground can be changing.
And Mr. Chair, I would concur that what we should probably do is propose to you some different wording both for this number 11 and for 12, so that rather than tracking the zoning, we're tracking farmland retained for farm use. That's really what we're trying to measure here, is how well does the state doing in retaining farmland for farming? And it was easy to track it if you were just looking at zoning, because up until Measure 37, if you took it out of farming, you had to rezone it.
Right.
Now, since that's not the case, probably this one in number 12 should be reworded a little differently. And then, as you see these numbers, the amount of retained drop, you'll know that that's likely due to Measure 37.
Okay, very good. Representative Schaffler.
Okay, then do you guys keep track of land that's been zoned for farmland and historically used for farmland that has been put into another use? If we're going to start tracking use, then if it's going to a park or a wetland or something like that, that's a change of use too. Would you keep track of that as well? Because taking farmland out of what is historically farmland, a pasture, for example, and putting it in a different use, would you track that as well?
I'll take a stab, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler. I think, first of all, if we're looking at the subset of Measure 37 claims and their impact, very few of those will be claims for the purpose of parks and wetlands. To the extent that you're taking changing zones, that we would pick that up through plan amendments if counties were changing zones. Otherwise, I don't know that we would pick up those changes.
Sure, may I clarify myself? It could be forest land or farmland, but it's not used for forest or farm anymore, and it's not developed. It's put off for some other reason. All maybe very well good reasons, but it's not being. If we're going to start tracking use, I'd like to track that too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think if we reword this to actually track the amount of farmland and then for the next one, forest land, that is retained for farm uses and forest uses, we would pick that up. We'd pick up those things where you'd actually change the use from farm to, say, a park, if it was a formal public park or something of that nature. If it's wetlands, I mean, there's an awful lot of farmland that is wetland, especially in the valley, and it's going to continue to be zoned. And I don't know that we would have any way of knowing how to track that in this measure. But for actual formal use changes like to parks, I think the reworded measure for this and for forest land would pick that up, and then you'll see not only things such as Measure 37 that converts farm and forest land, but you'd also pick up in that measurement other things. Measure 13 is we're looking at farm and forest land, but we're looking at it in a special way here. As urban growth boundaries are expanded, the land use program was crafted initially in order to try and encourage cities to look first to land that isn't farmland and use it first. In fact, that later became a statute in about 1993. Over time, there's less and less choice. As urban growth boundaries expand and they use up the land that's nearby that's right now zoned for, say, rural residential, pretty soon, as urban growth boundaries expand, more and more and more of the choice is only going to be farmland or forest land, and this is going to change. I think Measure 37 might change some of that, and also we are continually seeing, once again this session, for example, I've seen a bill to adjust the statute on that. So depending on what happens to the requirement in state law that encourages farm and forest land to be used as lowest priority, our targets could have to change on this. Right now we're exceeding our targets.
Okay, very good.
Number 14, there was a couple measures that came in, and you were mentioning just a minute ago about measures that came in from the committee last time, and
right.
We were looking closely at periodic review, and some fairly major changes were made. Those changes were made in order to eliminate a backlog that we had, and they were, in that regard, they were sunset. But that legislation also asked us to chair a committee that is making recommendations to the legislature for permanent changes to periodic review. So some of these measures, they were good measures, but only for a certain time period, and they don't make sense to retain long term. So we've recommended deleting, for example, number 14, which measured our performance up to the end of this biennium.
Okay.
In this particular piece. That limited new work programs, that will sunset.
Okay.
The next measure, number 15, this has to do with plan amendments, and we've requested a minor wording change because we think what was meant to be tracked there is our response. There is a statutory deadline for us to respond to local proposals so that we don't wait till the last minute, I guess is one way to phrase that. And we think that's what was meant. We would modify the wording to make that clear, but we would try to meet that with 100% performance.
Okay, so you want to modify that wording rather than delete this measurement entirely?
Yes, just to make it clear that we're talking about not those that meet statutory deadline, but that where our review and comment back to local government is within the deadline set by statute. So it's just a clarification. We think that's what it meant anyway. But it just wasn't worded as in the best way. And we have proposed that rewording.
It's under tab D.
Under tab D.
It is. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Very good.
Number 16, this was a measure that we came up with rather in a hurry, I think, to come up with the ways to try and be more customer friendly. Our concern with this is that it's very hard to give anybody an objective rating of when something is worded in a clear way. We want to keep this measure internally, but we question whether it ought to continue as a statewide part of the statewide data.
Mr. Chair, they could just say if Schaffler understands it, just about anybody can.
Would you like us to amend the...
Just so we don't have any Mr. Shannon, these redundant.
That's right. I'm not writing these, Mr. Chair.
Measure 17, then, moving on to that, under state law, if if the department is going to appeal a local planning decision, we have to have LCDC concurrence prior to filing. In other words, it's a prerequisite to filing an appeal. In that regard, we think this measure will always be 100%. I don't know what we're measuring here. We can't file an appeal unless LCDC concurs. And so we're measuring here whether we're meeting state law. In that regard, we've suggested we might want to delete this. Not that we're not going to follow the law, but in fact, because we have to.
And this is referring to the commission.
Correct. Well, it's referring to the agency. The agency files appeals. We do that very rarely, and we did not file any, I think, for the last biennium. But whenever we do, this measure is asking, did we ask our commission to concur in our decision to file, and did they say yes? State law says that.
State law says they have to, that we have to ask, and they have to approve the filing of an appeal.
That's a redundant.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
We knew we'd find one.
Measure 18 is actually a two-part measure, and the second part is something that's
obsolete.
It's sunset, so we would drop that piece. The first part we would amend slightly under Senate Bill 920 from last session. The correct time period should be 120 days rather than 6 months. So we have proposed to retain that measure, but to change the time period to 120 days.
Or I think we said it is 4 months.
4 months.
Yeah.
Since that's what the law is now. Measure 19 is also referring to something that this passed. This refers to Senate Bill 920 regarding changes to our periodic review program. The commission was authorized to retain non-mandatory periodic review work tasks. Even if the local government didn't want us to retain them, we didn't do any of those, but that particular piece of the statute is also sunset. So we have proposed deleting this measure. It was only intended to measure for the last biennium. It would not make any sense to go forward unless we somehow amend the statute to put this particular piece back in.
Do you got any questions, Ray Parks? I think we're almost flabbergasted here looking at that one.
Yeah. Maybe it's not planning, Mr. Chair.
Performance Measure 20 has to do with local grants awarded within 1 month after receiving the application. And as you can tell, we did very poorly on this measure. And so part of what I was going to give you is some of the reason for that. Senate Bill 920 asked us to appoint a committee to, which we did, to make recommendations on the way we award grants. Unfortunately, because of the process of appointing that committee, having them get up and running and make recommendations, we ended up with one brief period for all the grant applications to come in. They all came in at once, which usually wouldn't happen. In fact, one of the recommendations from that committee, now that it's up and running, is that we stagger our grant deadline so that we get grant applications spread out over the biennium. But because they all came in at once, we were not able to process them all within a month. We did a fair amount, but we didn't get them all there. We are now proposing that this be amended. The Grants Committee, I think, has concurred. The department believes that a two-month period would be something that we should strive for and could under most circumstances, should be able to meet, but that we will rarely be able to process these kind of grants within 1 month only.
Just, Mr. Chair, if I may, just to add on to that about the delay in getting the grants out the door, it was also required of the department that the department come before the e-board for approval of the grants advisory committee proposal, and so that didn't happen until April. I think we note there on the report. So by that time, we were almost halfway through the biennium. A lot of pent-up demand. The applications really did come in just all in one fell swoop, which made it very problematic to try and process out in 1 month's time.
Representative Schaffler.
Now, is this included in here, some federal grant money that some people said maybe we shouldn't accept or not. Is that an example of this?
No, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, this is not. There is some federal grant money that goes through the coastal program, but this it is not tied in with that other issue you're talking about as to whether or not we want to. We've not declined any federal grants for the purpose of these grants as a state.
Mr. Chair, moving on then to 21. No questions. This is tracking those local land use decisions that we appeal to LUBA, and what we're measuring here is how many of those are upheld. If they're upheld, then that's some measure that we're not, as some people have stated, we're not filing appeals needlessly. We didn't file any appeals, and that's what the asterisks show for 2003, but generally, up until then, with the data we have, you'll see that we have a good track record, that those decisions we do appeal, which is fairly rare, that we are generally upheld by LUBA and the courts.
And this one is recommended for modification. Let's see. Teddy, what's the crossover on that one?
Number 20,
the language now.
21.
The new language is the percentage of agency appeals of local land use decisions that are upheld. Let me see, is that it?
Yes, we reworded it. We don't think we're changing the data set. The rewording would make it more clear that we're talking about those decisions that
upheld by LUBA and the courts.
Yeah, upheld by LUBA and the courts, not just LUBA. So it could be misconstrued that's just by LUBA. Moving on, if there's no questions.
I think so.
Measure 22. again, what we're showing here is not real clear from the wording. This is the wording that was handed us from the Ways and Means Committee last time. We proposed to modify it just to make it clear that what we're talking about here is periodic review. Only under periodic review does the agency have the authority to return something to a local jurisdiction for further action. So our rewording would say we're discussing periodic review land use decisions that the agency reviews and then sends back for further work.
And, Mr. Chair, this is one that if we are under our target, that demonstrates that local governments and we are doing a good job. This is one where actually we want to be under the target because the more we are sending back, that indicates that we're getting amendments that are not in compliance, and that either is a reflection on how well we're doing at communicating the requirements or how well cities and counties are at following those. So far, we're, as you can see, the target out at 2006 would be 15. It's 8.14. Our target will be to keep that under that 15. It's a different kind of performance measure.
Okay, Representative Schaffner?
And wouldn't it be a better way to measure the number of decisions that were accurately, properly done and not? Wouldn't you look? I mean, I'd rather have a 92 score than an 8 score. You see what I mean? It depends on how you read the graph.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffer, we could reword it to do that. It would be tracking the same thing. Part of what's problematic in this is an awful lot of this is reflective of how well local governments are meeting the local requirements, and so it's really troubling to us to try to set a target. You know, should we predict that there's going to be more or less periodic reviews that come in that are done properly? We would certainly like that to be less. And what we could do is turn this around and track the number that are done properly and are not returned if you wish. That would be up to you.
Answer your question?
Yeah, sure, you bet.
Is that everyone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, this is, you were doing these performance audits kind of under an internal review or audit yourself. That's kind of all these. And some of these were found that were kind of lacking in clarity. I mean, I guess the question is, you do an internal review of your analysis of your own performance. Do you ever make that public and really let us know what's going on in your department, or are we just kind of skirting around with the issues here?
Mr. Yeah. Chair, Senator Nelson, we reported, first of all, there were several measures that really were handed to us by this committee last session. that we probably needed to take a lot more time and didn't in the way how fast things were moving at the end last time. But what we did is reported back to the progress board with recommendations to change these, and that was based on our internal audit. And then so the formal report was a request to modify most of these. We wanted to modify the wording so that they were more clear, or in some cases drop them because they were only interim. That was a public document, that interim request to change these.
And also, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the performance report is on our website, and I think it's also on the Progress Board website, too. So as these are developed, we do make them available. And in fact, I think there's a link even right from the front page of our website to performance measures. And again, our purpose in suggesting modifications to these is actually to make them more reflective and more meaningful of the work that we're doing.
I mean, I'm just thinking, I mean, you, as an agency, you obviously do internal sort of self-analysis of everything. And there's probably sometimes you think, geez, I don't want the public to really know about this. You know, we maybe fouled up someplace along the line. And how it kind of goes back to what Representative Krieger was saying, is that you have all these performance measures, but accountability is really within your agency and with the director, who says, look, we're really fouling up. And I sense that there's been a change, maybe not fouling up, but there needs to be a change. And so, I mean, how to see, like, more meaningful us to get something, you know, that would be more understandable than these performance measures. And that's the thing I'm struggling with, I guess.
In your mind, Lane, does this whole thing on performance measures kind of come from the mindset that the legislature wants accountability within the agency? You're kind of examining yourselves and telling us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that's a good question, because I'm going through this exercise, first of all, for the first time in my new position, and also on performance measures that we've inherited, that I inherited coming into the job as the director. My sense, kind of blending my previous experience with this, is in large part, and maybe staff has more history with this as well, but I think the issue of performance measures really has the Ways and Means Committee is very interested in that, typically to demonstrate accountability so that the agencies are accountable to the legislature for the work that the agencies are doing. I think that's appropriate. We should care about these internally, and I'll tell you that we do. It's like kids in school. You really do care about the grade you're going to get. You want to get a good grade. So the challenge, I think, between the legislature and the agencies, and I've appreciated the give and take that we've had here today, is always to find and then define those performance measures that give you the best picture of how an agency is performing. Sometimes data is easy to pull out, and so it's an attractive it's attractive for a performance measure, but that data is not necessarily always the best indicator of how you're really doing. Sometimes the things that are foremost on folks' minds, such as what's the culture of an agency? Are they really have they really made the turn from emphasis on regulation to an emphasis on technical assistance and facilitation? Those are hard to measure with data. And so I think, it's going to be a biennial struggle to refine these to reflect performance measures that have data that demonstrate that an agency is moving in the right direction. But I think you can't rely on those performance measures only, and it's going to have to take this kind of one-on-one discussion to be satisfied among yourselves that apart from what it says on the page, this agency is moving in the right direction in those other areas that are harder to measure.
I've got 22 of these things. I haven't gone back and counted, but there's one group of three you're going to throw out and one over here you're going to throw out. So maybe half a dozen probably don't have the substance that you're looking for. So you're already doing a self-analysis. Does this really do anything for anybody?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I think it does. I mean, like I say, I would not say that. I'll tell you, I don't consider this to be the be-all and end-all of the measure of the department for my purposes. I know that there are intangibles and there are other issues in the department that we need to watch and be vigilant for. But that's not to say that there isn't merit and value. I think there is. I think it will, over time, as we get better at this, and I say we, both in terms of the legislature and the agencies, as we get better at finding those measures that really do reflect the work that the agencies are doing, they'll become more meaningful. But I think it's a good exercise. We do the internal analysis as we prepare last spring to get ready to go to the progress board. That was that internal review that got us reviewing this and saying, well, wait a minute, this isn't measuring the right thing. If we were to say we should measure this, we could make this performance measure better. I'll bet we're not there yet. I'll bet this is going to be an ongoing process every session as law changes and as we get more experience with these. But I think there's value in them.
If I could add one more thing, this is a fairly new exercise, certainly for our agency and perhaps for many, because even though our agency's been around for some 25, 30 years, it's only in the last two biennia that we've done this, and I was involved initially of developing these for the first time for our agency. Time flies, was it 3 years ago? There were many more things that we do that we thought ought to be subject to a performance measure so that we could be grading ourselves. The biggest problem we ran into was lack of data. And, we're going to be continuing to talk to legislators and others about trying to upgrade our ability to gather data about land use and how the state's performing. And as we do so, I would think that we'll be introducing new measures. But because it's new, this was our first chance to. We took a crack at these, and then we had some changes at the end of the session last time. But this was really our first chance to sort of do a first term evaluation. Okay, now we've had these in place a couple of years. Some of them we thought ought to be worded to be more transparent. Some of them we might want to adjust targets. But it's really our first opportunity to evaluate how we've done and just putting them together.
Very good. Good point.
Mr. Chair, Right in the name of your department, land conservation and development, we've given you guys an impossible task. I mean, somebody can look at a forest and see a park. Another person sees a bunch of timber, where there could be lumber and jobs. And, somehow we got to balance all that. And, Oregonians want us to conserve what's good and develop where we can. And yet when you go to somebody who comes to my office and says, well, I want more money for education, and I do this, I say, well, then you're going to help me build more industry and mill more lumber and generate more power on the Columbia or irrigate more crops out in Hermiston. And they will say, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Well, I really, in these performance measures, if we want to put things in plain English, if a regular average Joe or Joanne came in here and listened to this conversation, they'd say, what in the hell are they talking about? And you know what? They wouldn't even care what we're talking about. I'm not a bit jumping up and down on you guys. It's every department that's come before us. We are giving them an impossible task. We're spending millions of dollars trying to figure out how many angels are dancing on the tip of a pin. And you know what? We can't do it. All Oregonians want us to do, and forgive me, Mr. Chair, is all they want us to do is give them a job, educate their kids, and protect what they think is Oregon, and we can't define that either.
Now, Representative, I'm not sure I agree with you in saying that perhaps you should rethink your choice of words, that they want us to give them a job. I don't think they're here to give them a job.
Forgive me, Mr. Chair. Thank you for correcting that. Yeah, create an environment that will incent and attract investment. Create a job, and then through that generate revenue and do all this. But you know what? We have handed you an impossible task. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schaffler, I feel your pain.
And you have felt in times past the same pain.
You are absolutely right. I just want to say, that was... I am pleased that our discussion over at this phase one did not begin with performance measures. I think that would have been the wrong place to begin. And reflecting back on Thursday, I just thought the conversation was so good about the culture of the department, the emphasis that the governor has assigned us to get behind his agenda for economic development. Those are the kind of things that I hope somebody sitting in the back of the room would have picked up on and said, hey, now they're going in the right direction. You're right. Once the conversation shifts to performance measure number 3, number 7, that becomes much more technical. But I think that in the big picture, there's still a place for it. But I'll tell you that I think it is worth pointing out and saying that I'm so pleased that our time together here did not begin with these performance measures, but really did begin with that much more global conversation that recognizes the overall charge that we have as a department. And you're right, that conflict is inherent in it. It's something, but we deal with it.
Tim Krieger, nice tie, by the way. Nicely done. Did Colleen pick that up for you today?
She picked most of my clothes out. Including my pajamas.
Strike that. Please, strike that.
Now you made me forget what I was going to ask.
We don't need to know that.
Maybe you should have... What you're doing really today, we're having a discussion about the performance measures. And that's what we're doing. We're measuring performance measures.
Well, and that's a necessary part of this process, in that we need to ensure that the direction the agency is going is, first of all, we're holding them accountable for doing their best to serve the people that they serve. And I think it's entirely appropriate that we do that.
I think they found out, Mr. Chair, something about themselves. The agency has.
Well, yeah, and I think the director put it appropriately in talking about the appropriateness of a cultural change in terms of the agency and the governor's direction in that, which I think probably most of us agree is wholly appropriate. And recognizing it is a very difficult balance, land conservation and development. They're oxymorons, and they're diametrically opposed. It's like taking two ends of a magnet, you know, the same magnetized ends, and trying to shove them together. It just doesn't work very well. So it is a difficult task, and sometimes we are very critical of the agency. But I do want to go back to a couple of performance measures. I had made notes. I needed to chat with my staff briefly. Back to number 18, please. The first bullet point under the percent of periodic review is fine. I think the second bullet point you guys wanted to delete also. We were interested in knowing the number of rather than just the percentage of total periodic review cases out there. Number one. Secondly, we wanted to know. The percentage of periodic review over 6 months, if there is such a thing. And then lastly, how many, I think it would be governments, for lack of a better term, are in periodic review because... Did I write that down right, Sue? Because of the agency or local decisions? Is that...
I think the issue, Mr. Chair, was what was the reason for the backlog?
The reason for the backlog. Okay. I didn't write this down.
Yeah.
We'll get that to you in a concise format. I would call your attention just your own leisure. Tab J is the report to the legislature from the department on the status of periodic review. On page 2 of that, it shows that at the time Senate Bill 920 became effective, that would have been 2 years ago, there were more than 170 outstanding tasks on city work programs and more than 50 for counties. On November 1 of 2004, that number was down to 72 tasks on city programs and 32 on counties. So we've reduced from 170 to 72 on city work programs, and from 50 to 32 on county work programs.
Okay, very good. And that's the total numbers. Is it the total numbers? Are they there?
Yeah, and what we can do is update you. We'll update you those numbers even now, because that is as of November, and we can show you more
data.
Progress.
That'd be great. We'd love to see more progress on that. And then how? And can you, in just a moment, Representative, in regards to why was there a backlog? Do you have any sense of that?
why the backlog existed. Is that narrative as part of?
Yeah. We can provide that, Mr. Chair. The backlog. There were a lot of reasons for the backlog, and we could probably give you a memo that outlines that.
Okay.
To a large extent, each jurisdiction negotiates with the department as to what needs to be done for periodic review. That was a change we instituted in 92 so that the process of just deciding what is the work task for periodic review became a negotiated situation. I think we agreed at the end of last session that part of what happened there is that there was a combination. Many local governments probably wanted to do more than they could reasonably do, and we probably shouldn't have allowed that to happen. And then there were some things that we requested that probably should have been lower priority. So I think through a narrative we might be able to give you some sense of that.
If you could do that, that would be helpful in helping us understand and perhaps looking to the future to try to keep those backlogs at a minimum because of those recognitions that maybe you shouldn't let them go as far as they wanted to, and perhaps maybe some things you shouldn't have asked them at the same time. And percentage of review over 6 months, are those in here also on page 2?
I don't see that, although I do see that on page 3, second column in the first paragraph, during the first 10 months of 2004, last year, the average time DLCD took to make a decision on submitted work tasks was 12 weeks.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the statute changed that to 4 months. That's why we've requested that the measure be changed. But we can report to you how many met that and how many.
Why don't you go ahead and do it consistent with the statute then to 4 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes more sense. That way, there's a nexus there that has some logic to it. Great. Thank you very much. And then let's move on to number 20. Just briefly, I think your analysis. I just wanted to know why your data was so low for 2003, and I think your analysis sort of explains it. Anything new to add to that, really?
No, Mr. Chair, I think we talked about it briefly with the subcommittee. It was just the manner in which the grants became available at one time, almost midway through the biennium. It was just everything came in at once as opposed to a more staggered flow that we had anticipated.
Okay.
So I think that was an issue that we won't see repeated. We've recommended a modification to 2 months because that better tracks with the grant advisory committee and the process that they've outlined for the award of grants. But we think 2 months ought to get us right up to that 90% if we don't exceed it.
Standing.
And we'd also add that committee was, that was the first time that committee had been set up. And so we did have that long hiatus there where we couldn't put out grants because we needed that to meet that. We think that committee ought to continue meeting, and we'll continue evaluating our grant program.
Very good. And lastly, there's two more. In number 21, again, percentages are fine. But we'd also like to know, perhaps add another line, what is the total number of appeals? So that gives us some sense. Now, is that covered in the narrative also at a further tab?
It is, Mr. Chair, if you look on, under the heading Compare Actual Performance to Target and Explain Any Variance, and it says since no appeals were filed by the department, so the number actually was zero in this. We could be more clear about that in the way we state that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we could continue reporting that to you. It's going to change. It's been around 10 per year for the last couple of years.
Why don't you just notate that for the performance measure for 2 years from now. Yes.
Can you tell me how many? Obviously, you don't lose many. Can you remember the last time a decision that you all made was turned over?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, not since I've been director.
Now that's a performance measure to be proud of. Yes.
Going back further than that,
I remember a couple, but I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, yes. Representative Schaffler, but I'd be hard pressed to kind of give you dates and times. I remember a decision that we did lose versus Douglas County on population about 1999. There must have been some others, but once in a while, but rarely.
Okay, and number 22. total number of decisions returned. And it says here that local jurisdictions usually do not need to readdress periodic review tasks after their initial adoption, usually, but are there times where it is necessary? So how many numbers?
Again, these are periodic reviews which we've asked to modify that so that's more clear, that what we only thing we have authority to return to local government is periodic reviews and particular tasks. Usually, when LCDC or the department returns a task to local government, that almost always is accompanied with an explanation as to what particular statewide standard or law the submittal didn't meet, and so usually there are instructions as to how to bring that up to compliance with whatever that law is. There's never a start over kind of an instruction. It's typically just modification of what was submitted in the first place.
I see.
And Mr. Chair, we have tagged this for modification to refer to periodic review work tasks as opposed to land use decisions, because that is a huge range of decisions, most of which don't even come to us.
Right, we can't return.
Periodic review, we get.
Okay.
All right. Very good. I think that concludes the community. Final thoughts before we depart from performance measures? Okay, very good. Let's go on to prioritization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll call your attention to tab B. And I apologize that these were not copied so well as the performance measures. Probably best if you take them out of the notebook because of the way the page turns occur. On the first page, it is our department-wide priority. We're, as you know, a small department. Our programs are inextricably linked. But what we've done here is really identify in terms of what we see our core mission being. And those really are grouped in the first five of the priorities. Those really capture the technical assistance services that we provide to local communities. That's really what that says. We have highlighted those five categories as being of highest priority for budget purposes because, again, consistent with my remarks to the committee subcommittee on Thursday, we see that as being core to our function. That's the being out and working with communities. Hard to separate that, as we've seen in our conversation about the performance measures from the grants, because so much of how cities and counties respond to technical assistance is through grants that we are able to provide for periodic review, technical assistance, and on the coast, some actual projects. So we have identified our grants program as 6, 7, and 8. Those really have to be seen together because those represent grant funds from different pots and for different purposes, but they all go to local governments. Number 7 calls out...
Briefly, number 6, isn't that... That's coastal zone management grants. Wasn't that carried forward from last session?
Some of it was, yes.
How much do you know? Do you have the number there?
Off the top of my head. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry, I do not have that information off the top of my head. We can certainly put that.
Okay, well, when we get to phase two, why don't we? I'm just curious to know how much of that money on a regular basis is available for local grants there. And that isn't the case, though, with economic development or general fund grants.
Those are reappropriated, that's right.
Okay, please continue. Thank you.
All right, so that, again, we're breaking this into really two categories. The first category being 1 through 5, representing our technical and community assistance. 6, 7, and 8, the grants program, 9 and 10, it's hard to know where to put those. Those are the landowner notification, administration, and reimbursement. As you may recall, it was ballot measure 56. Ballot measure 56. They required the state and local governments to notify landowners when land use regulations were being adopted to that would affect the use of their property. We provide reimbursement to local governments through the landowner notification program. It's statutorily required. Just, again, hard to know where to put that. I wouldn't have put that up above our community and technical assistance, but it's certainly one that exists as a function of statute. And then number 11, again, hard to know where to put that, LCDC, of course, the commission itself and the services that we provide to the commission and the services of the commission to the program are also statutory and fall into, kind of lead us into the next category, which I guess I would characterize as the administrative part of the program. It's hard. You'd find it difficult to start cutting off from the bottom and still be able to maintain numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 because of the connections in the program. But, again, this gave us a chance, frankly, to underscore in our budget priorities, what I said last week, that we really do see our service to communities being number one in the core of our function, and the rest of this really supporting that role.
Lane, just on that note, do you charge an administrative cost to your various other programs?
Teddy, do you want to get up and address that?
Mr. Chair, Teddy Leland, Operations Services Manager for the department. We don't have an administrative cost that we charge. The administrative costs, if you were to put it into our budget, would in essence be our business services.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for my own curiosity, the landowner notification, if we did not do that, would we leave ourselves open to lawsuits and stuff like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffer, I assume we would. Yeah,
because it is statutorily mandated.
It's required.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, very good. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Please continue.
Mr. Chair, what follows from there is just a breakdown of that prioritization by program, by budget program. So on page 2, you see the planning program, which incorporates our regional representatives, our planning specialists, as well as the commission and the director's office and the other administrative services. Those are all part of the planning program for our budget purposes. There's nothing new in this particularly. The order in which these are prioritized on this page corresponds precisely to the order in which they appear relative to each other on the first page. On page 3, this is the grants program, and as I said on the discussion at first, it's hard to prioritize these. Frankly, if you wanted to shake these up and roll them out in a different order, it would be hard to argue. One, of course, is federal funding. That's the CZM. The other two are general fund grants. Of those two, we did place economic development grants above the general fund grants, recognizing that ties into the governor's directive to the mission of the department, but also recognizing that those general fund grants incorporate all of the technical assistance and periodic review work which we talked about in the performance measures. So it's hard to pull those apart. And then on page 4, that's just the budget program for landowner notification. Again, you really can't pull those apart, administration from reimbursement. I don't think we have anything else except to answer
questions. And that's really about it.
That is. Mr. Chair, the 10% reduction.
And Lane, this is from least painful to most painful, correct? And
that is correct.
Okay,
yes, right.
Good.
Yeah, good point. Although the pain begins right at the top.
What is your tolerance for pain?
That's right. We have prepared these as a 10% reduction to the governor's recommended budget. And since the governor's recommended budget included several of our policy option packages, frankly, that's where we started. We thought that as important and I believe critical these are to the future of the land use planning program, we did feel it important to protect and prioritize our current program offering and services, again, getting back to the service that we provide to communities, technical assistance. And so what you've got here, number one, is our policy option package on the 30-year review of land use planning. Below that is the policy option package of management accountability that essentially is a deputy director position. I can tell you that part of the success we've had has been my ability to be out and in the communities meeting with local community leaders and bringing the message of the department out to them, but also bringing back to the department their message to us. Very difficult to do without the assistance of a deputy minding the store back in Salem and keeping watch on the rest of what we rely on for management and budget accountability. But we don't have a permanent deputy director at this point. We would offer that up as part of the cut list if we are required to get there. The next piece being it's the IT POP, the information technology.
What will that really do for you, Lane? It isn't a, I mean, the entire expenditure is, what, $189,000, I think, on the previous page. Is that right?
The entire expenditure of...
$183,000 yeah. Of general fund for information technology, and you're proposing to reduce it by 33?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this represents the general fund portion of that.
If you had to make $33,000 reduction, does that cripple the ability to move forward with that? With that process in IT, or
I don't want to be so dramatic as to say cripple. It certainly would impede it.
It would impede it some.
So and I think what we heard too in response to our performance measures is frankly a lot of what we would like to be measuring and thinking that we could be measuring is simply not available to us as data because we don't have the capacity. I was shocked, frankly, coming into the department to see the level of IT capacity in that department.
The lack of that.
That's correct.
Because you don't have enough data to perhaps finish up in the performance measures that we're asking.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. We are way behind the eight ball. I think the way I've described our IT package altogether is that it gets us into the late 20th century. it is not a bells and whistles kind of proposal that we've offered. And I would point out that having vetted this through IRMD, they fully endorsed the department's request for IT.
Well, that scares me. Just kidding. Representative Schaffler.
Thanks.
You know, Beth, I think, though, the fact that you don't have the current ability to do things with, you know, technologically certainly probably slows you way down in these performance measures. Which would probably turn a lot of heads around maybe and calm a lot of people down if you could provide them or us or whoever with that information in more timely.
Mr. Chair, there's no question about that. That's sort of that's the way IT is. If you don't have it, you can't do it. And our inability to do it does impair our ability to provide timely service to back to local governments, because that, again, is what we do. The rest of it, of course, the landowner notification, that is on the hope and premise that the demand for those special payments will not be there. The rest we get into grants. We're cutting into what we provide to local governments through numbers the DLCD, the CZM grants and CZM. I'm sorry, let me stop there. The grants, that's number 6 on the left-hand column. That reduces technical assistance grants on federal dollars through the coastal zone management. Part of that, below that, next we get into personal service contracts. These are folks that we are able to provide technical assistance to and planning services to coastal communities. Those would be reduced under that Below there is the Coastal Atlas.
Representative Schaffler?
Yeah, thank you for letting me butt in here, Lane. You know, on these grants, you got in 6, 7, 8, you got, you know, over $2 million there. Can none of that be used for your information technology to fill that hole? Is there some discretion where that money goes? Can you all, you just have to send it, it's where it's going. You can't say, we'd rather use this. It'd be more effective to carry out our charge using it to buy more computer power or whatever.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, first of all, the grant funds are grant funds, and that's part of our contract with the federal government, so they do control our capacity to use those for other purposes. And under our federal dollars available to us, we're already using every dollar that we can use for IT. Getting down toward the bottom, Coastal Zone, the Coastal Atlas is actually one of the best things we do. It is funded through the federal CZM program, and if you haven't ever gone online to look at it, you should. It's very user-friendly and something that can be used for coastal information from grade school on up to doctoral students and planners, the level of information that we provide there. This really gets at decreasing our ability to upgrade that and to expand and add service through the Coastal Atlas. And then the last thing under here is map modernization contracts under our FEMA program. The map modernization is something that we are being offered through the federal program to FEMA to update our hazard maps so that local communities have better information for the purpose of planning and development. That would affect their ability to rely on the information they get from us for those.
Well, very good. Members, any additional questions of the agency? Sue, you good to go? All right. That was relatively painless.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
It was useful to you. I enjoyed it.
It was indeed. And I appreciate it. And thanks for sharing with us about tab number J. Members, it may be useful to go back and read through the periodic review report there.
But we will still try and distill that down to the specific questions that you asked.
Yes,
we'll get a memo back to you on
that. That'd be great. All right. Well, if there's nothing further, thank you all very much. We'll see you in phase 2. And with that, members, we are adjourned.